Good morning, everybody, to this very early session. I allowed 5 minutes more for people to show up because it started very early at 8:30 today. My name is Alexandru Gerasim. I'll be coordinating this session. I work in Eurostat in the quality team, and I deal mainly with quality reviews. Today we have in session 19 quality standards for statistical domains. So we have some examples about quality standards applied in specific statistical domains. We have three presentations from from a European perspective and two from a national perspective. So I will kindly invite the first speaker, Maya Rinko. She's working as an assistant professor at the Warsaw School of Economics, the Institute of Statistics and Demography, since 2013. She holds a PhD in economics, and she had previously worked in the Central Statistical Office of Poland and in the private sector with statistical and econometric analysis, and in the Central Statistical Office in the Methodology and Labor Statistics Departments. And she will present to us her paper on quality of ICT skills indicators. So you have the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. So just at the beginning, I mentioned this is a joint work with Marta Palczyńska, who works at the Institute for Structural Research in Warsaw. But actually, the fact that we cooperate together is related to our past employment in Educational Research Institute in Poland, where we work with the PIAC survey, so the Program for the International Assessment of Adult Competencies. So Educational Research Institute was responsible for conducting this survey in Poland, and okay, this is like the fruit, let's say, of one of the fruits of our work on this. So today I will talk about the problem of ICT skills indicators. So I'll start with some introduction, motivation. I will shortly discuss the Eurostat methodology on assessing the level of ICT skills in the population, and also the PIAC methodology, the survey that I just mentioned. And then I will talk about our Polish follow-up study on PIAC, where we try to learn more about ICT skills in Poland. And we conducted a kind of experiment in post-PIAC. And then I will show some results about skills overstatement and some possible explanations for this. So like the introduction, why are skills important? Why are specifically ICT skills important? Okay, so so generally skills, we consider skills as like very much related to the human capital, and human capital is one of the main drivers for both social and economic development. And ICT skills are for sure an important part of generally like the skills and the human capital, and for sure are becoming more and more important nowadays. Okay, and some people talk about the new literacy, that ICT skills become as important as literacy or numeracy, or reading and writing. And there is a lot of research going on about skills generally and ICT skills. So ICT skills, we have a recent paper, Falk et al. 2016, which is an OECD working paper showing that indeed there is a substantial significant reward of the ICT skills in the labor market. So they use the instrumental variable methodology. And there are also other research, sometimes showing different results. Kruger, 1993, okay, it's a bit, let's say, historical paper, especially with respect to ICT skills, but he shows that indeed there is there are significant returns on ICT skills. But there is the paper of Dinardo and Pischke, who, for example, claim that we cannot show a causal relation between ICT skills and earning, that probably the higher earning are can be explained by some other skills, competencies that are also correlated with ICT skills. So the results are mixed, as usually, in the research area. But also, skills, ICT skills are of interest to the national governments or international institutions, and we see some relations to them in Digital Agenda for Europe, and e-skills Agenda for Europe, or the Polish Development Strategy. And like the motivation for this paper is like the question: okay, do we know where we are? Do we know what's the level of ICT skills in the population? So starting with some methodological aspects, we can measure the skills indirectly. When we talk about educational levels, it's actually an indirect measure of skills, or about jobs. Yeah, what is the percentage of people holding different jobs? This can be a proxy for skills, but of course it won't be a very accurate measure. Or we can have some direct measurements. And the direct measurements, we can have some self-assessment of skills. This is what was included in the adult education survey, I think. We have the self-reported ability to perform specific tasks when people are asked whether they have ever performed or they have performed within the last year some specific tasks related to ICT skills. Or we have the objective measurement that was, for example, incorporated in the PIAAC survey, where the respondents were given the computer of the interviewer and were asked to solve some specific exercises on the computer. It's not surprising that these different measures may provide different information about the level of skills in the population. And there is this challenge problem that the government would like to know what's the level of ICT skills, and based on this, the government may decide to shift some of the services to the digital part, to the e-services or e-solutions, or the same for the private sector. So when the government thinks it's 80% of the people having the ICT skills at a good level, they may decide to do it, but then it may occur that actually it's not that good and many people can be excluded, or we can have some kind of polarization in the society. So that's the real problem that actually should be addressed. Like in the US, there are some places that you don't have, for example, a bus schedule. You go with your mobile, you scan a special sign on the bus stop, and then you get the bus schedule on your mobile device. Okay, so the question is, would this solution work in our countries? Okay, and we have examples of misjudgment of ICT skills. These two papers, actually, they were looking at students in the US, in the UK. The students were asked to assess their skills. It was also used to plan the classes for the coming term. And when actually at one point they decided to ask the students to do the exercises to verify the skills objectively, it occurred that also the young people misjudge their skills. And we had the PIAAC experience in Poland. As I mentioned, PIAAC was designed that the respondents were supposed to solve the exercise on the computer. And there was also a paper version of the exercises, because the exercises were designed to measure literacy, numeracy, and problem solving in technology-rich environment. So especially for the literacy and numeracy, there were the paper versions of the exercises, but it was supposed to be like a very special solution, probably just for a couple of percentage of the respondents. But actually, in Poland, it occurred it was 50% of the respondents who did not solve the exercises on the computer, partly because they didn't have the skills, partly because they rejected, and we don't know actually why they rejected, partly because they claimed they had the skills and they failed the basic computer test. So this PIAAC experience shows that, we have some expectations about the level of skills, but then the practice shows something different. So the Eurostat methodology, we have the Digital Economy and Society Index that consists of several dimensions. And we are mainly interested here in this second dimension and the sub-dimension basic skills and usage, which comes from the community survey on ICT usage in households and by individuals. So for those who are not familiar with the survey, the question that I'm especially interested in is this one. Which of the following computer-related activities have you ever carried out? Okay, and there is a list of activities, copying or moving a file or folder, using a copy-paste tools to duplicate or remove information and using basic arithmetic formulas in a spreadsheet. So we'll be interested mostly in the first three. Okay, the basic question about PIAAC. So the survey coordinated by the OECD. We had the measurement literacy, numeracy, problem solving. The first round of PIAAC took place in 2011-2012. The target population is people aged 16-65. The first round was 24 countries. Now there are more countries covered by the PIAAC. In Poland, we had more than 9,000 respondents. So the third dimension of skills that was measured, the problem solving, was clearly directed towards, we could call it kind of ICT skills. But actually, we can draw already many conclusions from the fact how many people took the computer-based assessment. Yeah, because it's also providing us here like significant or important information. So when we look at the PIAAC results, what I mentioned so about the percentage of people taking the computer-based assessment, nearly 20% of people this age declared no computer experience in PIAAC, nearly 7% failed the basic computer test, 24% in Poland rejected to take the assessment, and only 20% are estimated to have like the good ICT skills. So one comment about the rejection, like as I said, the methodological team was not prepared for such a big proportion of people rejecting, so also the interviewers were not trained to collect the information why it happened. It was because someone was afraid of the computer, someone, no idea, was busy with playing with the child somewhere. Like, we have no idea what happened, we just have just the information that it was the rejection. And when we compare these numbers to the Eurostat estimates, we see these big differences that according to the Eurostat, 61% of Poles regularly use the computer. In the age group 16-24, it should be 93 for the year 2012. And for the PIAAC, we see these numbers, they're really substantially lower. Okay, and these were the biggest differences observed across the countries that took in the PIAAC round one. Okay, and then we had the post-PIAAC survey. So it was the Polish like local survey. So the goal was to gather the information on PIAAC respondents. So we repeated many PIAAC questions, but we also added some new questions. So the new questions were, among others, related to ICT. We implemented the Eurostat questions on the self-assessment, the ones, have you ever conducted the listed tasks? But also we implemented an objective assessment of these ICT skills. Okay, this is in Polish, the questions that we included. So this is like a copy of the Eurostat questions. And then it was the objective assessment. We asked the respondents to copy a file. So again, they were handed in the computer, the laptop of the interviewer, and the interviewer were instructed to really encourage the respondent to take the laptop, to go through the exercises, and the interviewers this time were like instructed also to collect any comments if there is a rejection, why it happened, what can be important. So this was an exercise, okay, please copy the file from one folder to another. Then we were asking them to like edit the text, to move the text from above the picture to below the picture, and then to do this basic spreadsheet calculation, okay, sum up the values here. It's like a list for shopping. And what occurred? It occurred that, okay, firstly, we had the self-assessment. Have you ever conducted these tasks? People claimed, okay, they conducted or not. And then we had the like real verification. So we had many people overstating their skills. So the overstatement in terms of copying the file or text editing was not like not substantial. But for example, for spreadsheet calculation, it was nearly 50%. Okay, so here we talk about the group of people who said that they have the skill, who didn't conduct this task or were not able to conduct this task, and like among them, we distinguish those who who claim that they cannot do it and those who claim that they can do it, so those who overstated. So we could look through like some descriptive statistics by different groups, but okay, like gathering this together, okay, we are running the basic regression model. It's a probability, linear probability model, but we also run the probit logit models that basically are consistent with these results. And what we see that actually the probability of overstating the ICT skills decreases with age, increases with the size of the place of residence. So like people from Warsaw are the most likely to overstate their skills. And also it increases with education. These are the most important results. And the explanation for this, okay, is probably there are some cognitive biases that happen in this answering process when we answer questions. And what is the most likely for us is the social desirability effect, yeah, or social desirability bias. Especially that people who are expected to have the highest ICT skills, these are the young people with the higher level of education, living in the bigger places, these are the people who are most likely to overstate their skills. So this is like in line with the social desirability theory that we have also a lot of research going on physical activity or diet where people know what are the social expectations for physical activity or diet and very often they overstate. So just to conclude, can we do something to decrease the desirability effect? Social desirability effect, it was mentioned even in this conference in several sessions, it's like web interviewing may help. But, not in terms actually of this topic, yeah, when we want to measure basic ICT skills. So the question is what we can do to decrease this effect. We stress that actually it's a problem for the quality of ICT skills indicators, because also very often we compare different groups, what are the level of ICT skills across the groups, and these groups also differ in their propensity to overstate their skills. So we can be not reliable in our conclusions, and for sure the government should be aware that when we look at the trends of ICT skills, probably we have a consistent picture, but when we want to say what's the level of ICT skills in the population, okay, here we may have like different picture depending on the survey. Okay, so thank you for the attention, and okay.
Thank you very much. I forgot to mention we'll take questions at the end. We'll discuss at the end. We'll now move to the second presentation. It will be done by Valeria Angelova. Valeria works at Eurostat in the Unit for Regional Statistics and Geographical Information and is in charge of methodology and communication of the city statistics and territorial typologies. She has a special interest in implementing functional geographies in the statistical practice, in particular in the labor market areas. Before joining Eurostat, she worked in the Bulgarian NSI for 9 years as a GISA expert. So Valeria will present to us her paper called The Method of Harmonized Labor Market Areas in Europe. Please, the floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming, and thanks to Alex for the nice introduction. So, the method of harmonized labor market areas. Basically, the labor market areas as a concept is nothing new. It exists for like the last 30 years, but under different names like working catchment areas, industrial districts, and many others based on different methods in different nations. So Eurostat considered that we definitely need to harmonize a bit the terminology, the methods, the approaches. Otherwise, if it's not harmonized, it cannot be used for policy purposes at European level. So I will explain you why exactly we are doing that, what is the value added of the labor market areas complementing other territorial concepts for statistics. I'll give you an overview of the algorithm, but not so much from the mathematical point of view, but more the logic of the algorithm, not so much what is behind the IT tool that supports this delineation. And I'll give you just a few illustrations of the results on labor market areas obtained by two countries. So basically, I believe all of you know the NATS, but just to remind you, it's a hierarchical structure of three levels, even four if we count the NAT zero for the country. It can be amended every 3 years to keep a minimum of stability of the time series. So it uses the administrative structure of the countries, and it should correspond to a particular population threshold. So unfortunately, this system of territorial units for statistics has some limitation, because so these boundaries are often historically inherited. They do not necessarily reflect on the reality of the labor market and other social phenomena. Actually, the worst situation we have by the commuting, because it distorts important information at NUTS level regarding GDP, employment, consumption, some environmental issues, especially in regions with a very intensive asymmetric commuting flows like Luxembourg, Zurich, inner London, etc. So this is one chart of our regional yearbook edition 2016, which very nicely illustrate what is the situation. So all these people, these are figures in thousand, commute every day to the region of Luxembourg. So they consume there, they generate waste, but okay, they create their GDP, but then they spend their money in their home region, they pay there the waste treatment taxes. So the data at regional level are destroyed to a certain extent. So that's why we consider that we definitely need functional geographies to complement this administrative based data. And what are the particular advantages of the labor market areas? So first to say, what is labor market area? So we consider it independent, economically integrated territory where the majority of people live and work. So the self-containment is a key word here. So they should be highly self-contained in terms of employment. And the most important advantage is that they are independent from the upper administrative level. So basically, this is the logic of the method. So the aim is to combine local administrative units, usually level two, at least most of the countries used to chosen to use this level. And the combination of these laws run till all laws satisfy a particular validity condition, which relates to internal cohesion and external separation principle of the newly built labor market area. Basically, the algorithm, our R package for delineation, it requires very limited input data. It requires only the persons employed in a given law and the persons commuting from a given law to another law. And the algorithm is playing with four parameters. These are the minimum and the target self-containment, and the minimum and the target number of persons employed. So the basic principle is that the target self-containment is always greater than the minimum. Initially, we created a default set of parameters, which you can see there, for recommended target and minimum self-containment, but the member states are not obliged to use them. They are serving only as a starting point, and after that, the expert should adjust these parameters to fit better to the national peculiarities, to capture some local peculiarities of the labor markets. And at the end, you can see the validity condition, which every single law should fulfill to be assigned to a particular LMA. And of course, the method doesn't stop here. It's needed some fine-tuning because the labor market area should be contiguous territory without any exclaves or enclaves. Basically, several countries worked with us. We had some stable partners which were working from the very first task force that we formed in 2013. But of course, we are expanding slowly the network. And I would like to show you a few results from two of the countries that work with us. These are Bulgaria and Portugal. Basically, they communicated their results on the LMAs with national stakeholders, and the results were very well received as meaningful, as really capturing the local labor market and the well-known commuting patterns at the local level. We didn't stop there. We made some further experiments, like we wanted to see whether the national labor market areas obtained based on the harmonized method that we proposed capture some fundamental characteristics of the regions, like the rurality. So this map shows. First to say, so the polygons, these are the labor market areas as obtained by the two member states. And the maps present the share of population by labor market areas living in a high density cluster and in urban cluster. This means in all grid cells that are outside rural grid cells. So you can see first that the labor market areas differ in terms of size. This is because Bulgaria focused more on capturing local isolated labor market areas, but with local significance for the life of the people living there. While Portugal tried to capture a bit bigger LMAs that are comparable as a size with the NUTS level in order to facilitate further production of data based on those labor market areas. And here are the results. Basically, in particular, the rural LMAs in Bulgaria are generally smaller than the rural LMAs in Portugal, exactly due to the reason that I just mentioned. And another interesting fact is that in Bulgaria there are no 100% urban LMA, while in Portugal we have such. This map shows basically the same phenomena, but this time, besides the boundaries of the LMAs, the distribution of the population by different type of density cluster is based on the clusters themselves. I realize that the resolution is, the scale is too small to be able to draw some conclusions, But first you can see, if you know the territories of those countries, that the picture is somehow in line with the relief, with the landscape of the two countries. And at least one can see that there is really an analytical power behind those two concepts of the grid and the functional geographies, in that case, the labor market areas. So if we combine them, and even furthermore with other layer, it's really, and of course our clients from the policy-making DGs, they admitted that the labor market areas are really a powerful analytical tool. So I tried here to stick only to the illustrations included in our paper. In fact, we have much more from other countries. All the results that we have are stored in our cross portal. And there is a section group of interests, and one of them is devoted on the labor market areas. We have there all reports received by the countries, various training materials based on the R package that I mentioned is free of charge. Everyone who has the commuting data of his or her country can test it. We also have various results presenting data already produced from different social surveys on the labor market areas using small area estimations, data integration, etc. It's really a lot of materials that I hope can be helpful to some of you for your studies. And basically, this is what I wanted to share with you. Thank you for listening, and after that, I will be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you very much, Valeria. We'll now move to the third presentation of the session, which will be done by Ioannis Sirokakis. He works at Eurostat since 2013. He's the team leader of ESBRS and the European profiling team. And he's a project manager for the last 3 years of the flagship project on European statistical system in the area of business statistics, namely the ESBRS system, European System of Statistical Business Registers. And he will present to us his paper called Improving the Quality of Business Statistics Through Profiling. So the floor is yours, Ioannis.
Thank you very much, Alex. So for most of the participants, I think the challenge after the dinner yesterday was to show up in the morning. For me, it is to find my voice. I left it somewhere in Krakow, so I'll do my best. So, as Alex said, I am responsible in Eurostat for European profiling and for the team that is working on the project of European Statistical Business Registers. We have written this paper with Vincent Hecquet, who is responsible, who was responsible for many years in France, in INSEE, for national profiling. So we would like to convince you, together with Vincent, that national and European profiling can really improve the quality of business statistics, which is not an easy task. So we will be talking about multinational enterprise groups, very big groups in the economy today, in the multinational economy, which dominate many business sectors and are organized in various complex structures. And we see in the last two decades, an important shift in economic reality that maybe 20 or 30 years ago would seem unthinkable. We have very big groups that span many countries in the world, and these groups transform their structures, their economic realities continuously. So they make departments in separate legal units, separate companies in our notation. They're moving around their activities and their assets, including intellectual property products. vertical activities such as HR or IT, become specialized centers located in one country and serving tens or hundreds of countries, while there are increased transactions between the companies, the legal units within this group. So having in mind how the groups operate and that they dominate many business sectors today, do we really believe that we calculate the right business statistics if we don't adapt our way of approaching this problem to the economic reality today? So we have to have the group activities correctly reflected in the national and European statistics. We have to ensure consistency between different statistical domains. We have to understand how the groups work so that we take them into account in business statistics such as SBS and FATS, or accounting frameworks such as national accounts, and in particular, the way they organize themselves, for example, for tax optimization purposes, or the way that they relocate their assets, for example, for achieving slim or cheap production worldwide. And this is not a challenge that we can address at the level of the national economy, because these groups are multinational. So we have to work together, because these practices affect the statistics of all countries involved, of all countries where the group operates. So the first step was to start talking about the statistical unit enterprise, and not about the statistical unit, legal unit, or company, if you like. So statistics based on legal units are sensitive when, as I said, groups restructure themselves internally, while enterprises, not so much. So what is an enterprise? It's a small combination of legal units, the smallest combination of legal units, that are producing goods or services, and they have a certain degree of autonomy. So the enterprise would look like more as a company in the traditional sense. The enterprise can be a legal unit or more legal units, and a group can consist of only one enterprise or of many enterprises. And this is the case of very big conglomerates with many activities. And in this way, national and European profiling comes into play. So profiling as a term, for those of you who have not seen it before, is a methodology, is an approach to analyze the economic and operational structure of the enterprise group rather than their legal structure, and reflect better their economic reality, their activity, their real activities. And we're talking about national profiling, when national profilers, limited to the national territory, define the enterprise nationally, and then we're talking about the national enterprise, the ENT, ENT, enterprise. And at the higher level, we are talking about European profiling. So there we are trying to define the global enterprise, as we say, the GEN, that could be seen as an enterprise at a global level that can start, for example, from the business segments of the company or important geographical segments of the group. So in this sense, we have to look beyond the legal structure. So in a perfect world, or in a world that was there 30 years ago or 50 years ago, we would be talking about four countries: the blue, red, orange, and green country. Each country has its own companies, its own enterprises. They are perfectly separated. We calculate statistics at the level of the national territory. Everything is fine. But this is not true today. So today, it looks more like that. So these color dots are, in fact, nodes of a complex tree. And this picture that you see now is probably the simplest picture that you can have, because groups have hundreds or thousands of legal units across the world. But this is not the right way to look at groups, because this is their legal structure. This is how they are organized internationally to serve their cheap production purposes or their tax optimization purposes, and not necessarily the way they really do business. So one way to see how they really do business is to go to the, as I said, to use profiling and to start talking about global enterprises that have global activities, that are global business segments. And they comprise of companies, of legal units in different national economies. So to approach this and many, many other cross-border issues in business statistics, the European Statistical System launched in 2013 the ESBRs project. So ESBRs means are the initials for the European System of Statistical Business Registers in Europe. Eurostat has financed many activities under this project. Really a very long list of activities to tackle these issues that pertain mostly to globalization. I would mention here three that are relevant to our discussion. So we have financed European profiling of 310 groups. This means that we have the national profilers in collaboration with Eurostat looked carefully into the real economic activity of 310 multinational groups. We have implemented a profiling tool where the national profilers from these countries, all European countries and EFTA countries, in total 32 countries, can save their results and can collaborate so that they can exchange confidential microdata information. We are talking about confidential microdata, right? And then, last but not least, in this respect, is the implementation of the Eurogroups Register, or EGR, which contains today around 100,000 multinational groups with their constituted legal units, their turnover, their employment, their activities. So this is a very important European asset, made only for statistics. A lot of people in Europe would kill to get this data, but we are not disclosing them. And our target, the target of this project, is that business statistics employ the national statistical business registers, but also EGR and profiling as sources for statistics on globalization. So there are several profiling methods. I will not go into detail. Just to mention that for the largest groups, our approach would be manual. We would go, all the national profilers would go through the groups on their national territory and try to understand how they operate. And the profilers that are located in the country of the headquarters would even meet the representatives of the group and try to understand together how the group really operates and what is the real economic activity. For the other large groups, you understand that this is a very costly operation for statistics. So we would do that manual exercise without visiting the groups themselves. While for medium-sized and small groups, we would use automated algorithms to try to define the enterprises. It is very important that European profiling, okay, I have to be very fast, makes a lot of sense when we're talking about foreign control groups, where we need the information from our partners. So what are our observations based on the results of this analysis of 310 groups? So the enterprise seems to provide a better view. Non-additive variables such as turnover are consolidated within the concept of the enterprise, so the real market flows are closer to reality. So we cancel out the intra-group flows, while no chance is observed for non-additive variables. We see an important shift from services to manufacturing. So when we are consolidating legal units in the enterprise, we see that services legal units tend to consolidate into manufacturing ones. And then what are the real quality improvements of profiling? I'll not go through the table, but let's see the first column. the results that the profilers themselves report. So we managed to go beyond the legal group structure. We avoid double counting of turnover of non-additive variables. We can group productive, ancillary, and sales legal units into meaningful enterprises. The enterprises have appropriate size and activity, and we can thus evaluate the footprint of the multinational groups at the national economy. In particular, for national profiling, in addition, we can establish dialogue between the groups and statisticians. This is very important. This was something that was missing, reported by all national profilers. And then we can also update our national registers with fresh, updated group data. And going to European profiling, we can locate the correct country of headquarters. This is not always the case. We can ensure that we have our national statistics are consistent cross-border between countries. We can correct erroneous relationships between legal units, mother-daughter relationship. We can define the global activities and the national activities of multinational groups, and we can establish structural models. For example, if we analyze two or three oil production groups, then the rest of them are more or less the same. And then finally, going into, these are the qualitative results, going into some quantitative results, very preliminary, but I think indicative. We analyzed 157, the half of the 310 groups, which were profiled by 19 countries using the profiling tool. These groups are important, so they employ altogether around 4 million employees, and they operate in 16 countries. And what did we find? What did the profilers find? That these 157 groups correspond to 440 global enterprises. So they have three times more enterprises and not 100 times more. So even one third of these global of these groups were mapped only to one enterprise. So even if they had inside 1,000 legal units, the profiler said, but they have only one activity. So this is one company, one enterprise. Then it's important to mention that profiling in this way leads to consolidation towards the main activity, which is something we are targeting at. And then just to show, yes, this is the end. Some indicative results. So you see, we had 88 manufacturing groups and 18 services groups, business to business. So you see from the second line, manufacturing, the shift from 72% to almost 80% of the activity of the group towards manufacturing for manufacturing groups. And from the sixth line, I think, seventh, the same shift for services from 64% to 86%. So this shows the consolidation towards the real activity of the group when we are looking at the global enterprise and not the legal unit itself. As a visual example, and this is my last slide, I think, so imagine that you have on the left side a group, and this is a real case, but these are confidential microdata, so I cannot tell you names. On the left-hand side, you see the group with 120 legal units that are distributed over 15 activities, because this is what they do, the companies within the group, in 20 countries. And on the right-hand side, you can see the group after profiling with the same 120 legal units, but distributed over only three global enterprises. So I'm not saying that the left-hand side is the wrong picture and the right-hand side is the right picture. But I say that the truth is somewhere in the middle. And the point in the middle would make great difference to statistics, to business statistics, I think. So it is the end. I would just say that in this paper, in this presentation, we tried to show, probably for the first time at European level, with some qualitative and quantitative results, that national European profiling makes sense. It is a tool to improve business statistics. We have to invest more on that. It is a costly exercise, so we have to be careful and we have to think strategically. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ioannis, for this very interesting presentation at European level. Now we'll move to the colleagues from France who will show us a perspective of profiling at national level in France. So I welcome Thomas Balcon and Camille Schweitzer from the Ministry of Higher Education, Research and Innovation in France. And they will be presenting the paper on profiling, a new way to increase the quality of statistics on research and development. So the floor is yours. And I kindly ask you to keep that. Sorry, I have to penalize you, but you have to keep the 12 minutes allocated. Thank you.
Okay, hello everybody. Thank you for coming. So we will show you how profiling could be a new way to increase the quality of statistics on research and development. As an introduction, I would want to say that in France, the statistics on research and development are computed from a survey that we address to the enterprises, more or less 11,000 enterprises. Historically, the statistical unit and the data collection unit are the same. It is the legal unit. But as it was said by Ioannis, it appears more and more relevant that the statistical unit has to be the enterprise. So in our presentation, we will focus on only one variable of our survey. It is a BERD, business expenditure on research and development. So the presentation it is made of three parts. In the first part, I will show you how we can get the data at the enterprise level. Afterwards, I will show you how we can get an estimate of the total BERD from the respondent enterprises. And at the end, Camille will show you which estimator at the enterprise level we have retained. So first of all, how we can get the data at the enterprise level. The first idea is to collect the data at the enterprise level, but it is not so easy because it appears in practice that it is better to keep collecting data at the legal unit level, in particular for research and development statistics. It is sometimes very difficult to find a good correspondent in the legal unit level. So if we have to find a good correspondent in the enterprise level, it could be a hard work. So we think that it is better to keep the legal unit level as the data collection unit. So as our interest variable is an additive one, we have to sum all the BERD for the all legal units in an enterprise. But we have to face some difficulties because some legal units that are in an enterprise don't give us their BERD. There are two cases. The first case is that the legal unit is not sampled, or is a non-respondent legal unit. And in the other side, you have some legal units that appear in a group responses. The group responses is a concept that we have to face in our statistics. A group response is a legal unit that will answer for himself, but also for other legal units. And these legal units are not compulsory in the same group. So after having estimated the BERD for the legal units for which we don't know initially the value of this BERD, we have all the BERD for all the legal units. So if we have a look to the distribution of our respondent enterprises, so we assume that a respondent enterprise is an enterprise for which at least one legal unit have answered to our survey. So you have 87% of respondent enterprise for which there are no estimated bird for all the legal units in the enterprises. So from the initial survey, we know all the bird for the enterprise. On the opposite, we have 13% of the respondent enterprises for which an estimation was necessary. So so after this work of estimation, we could see that that we have managed to get the value of bird for the 8,855 respondent enterprise of our sample. So now that we have got the data, we have to manage to compute the total of our bird. So we need to compute some weights. So in the literature, you can find a method that is very useful for this kind of problem. It is the generalized weight share method, or GWSM. So we start from the legal unit weights, and we manage to get some enterprise weights. You have two methods. The first method is the GWSM with classical links. This method is only based on the number of legal units in the population, and you have a most of sophisticated method with links weighted by the bird, which is our principal variable of interest.
So now that we have our two estimators, we have to choose which one keep. So we decided to choose a simple criterion at this point of our work, which is the relative deviation to the real total on our enterprise's population. We choose several variables to see those relative deviations. Number of enterprises and number of legal units corresponding to those enterprises. Also turnover and headcount, which are variables available in the French Business Register, and our variable of interest, which is bird. For this variable, bird, the GWSM method with bird-weighted links gives us the total bird, the same total bird that we are now computing on the legal unit level. But we decided to compare it to the total on the enterprise population, which is not the real total, but the estimate total with the work we have done before. Like Thomas said, we imputed the bird for some legal units. But for the other variables, it's the real total on a population. And for all those variables, the GWSM method with bird-weighted links it's better by the relative deviation criterion. For example, it overestimated the turnover for 1%, which is a good estimation, whereas the method with classical links underestimated for 3%. So it would be necessary to assess the quality of those estimators with other criterion. For example, we could run some simulations on different samples to compute a bias. But at this point of our work, we decide to choose the GWSM bird weighted links estimator as a better one. which is interesting to assess the quality of this estimator and the relevance to analyze R&D with this new definition of enterprise. It, for example, the analysis by business categories. Business categories are based on the definition of enterprise with some threshold on headcount, on turnover. These two graphs are the breakdown of birds by business category and breakdown of number of enterprises by a business category. So to explain the four breakdowns, the first one is corresponding to the share of bird by business categories on our enterprise population. The second one on our enterprise sample with our new estimator with the GWSM bird weighted links. And the third breakdown corresponding to the legal unit sample on which we applied business category definition. So we consider that a legal unit is, for example, a large enterprise when she's belonging to a large enterprise. The fourth breakdown corresponds to our legal unit sample again, but it corresponds to our previous definition only based on headcount of the legal units. That means that before we considered that a legal unit was a large enterprise, a large legal unit, when it has more than 5,000 employees, which was a definition not based on the enterprise definition. And we see that with the new enterprise definition and business categories based on the enterprises, we estimate way much better the share of large enterprises because they represent more than the half of total business expenditure on R&D, whereas with our legal units definition, it represents only a quarter. So we see the relevance of the definition of enterprise and the importance of profiling groups to better understand R&D in economy. The second graph shows that the estimation on a legal unit with a new business category definition gives us the great share of birds, but we can't say anything on a number of enterprises because we only know that we have 6% of legal units belonging to a large enterprise. But in fact, thanks to our estimator, we know that there are 2% of large enterprises in our enterprise population. So it's more accurate and relevant. So just to conclude our about next steps, so we want to carry out some simulation to assess the quality of our estimator, and it will be important to apply a new set of weights on other R&D variables, for example, R&D headcount and researcher, and maybe think to change our sample. For example, we could sample enterprises and interrogate all the legal units of sample enterprise, which allows us to there would be less legal units to impute in the first part of our work. Well, thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. And I will move to the last presentation of today. It will be done by Denisa Florescu. Denisa works at Eurostat in the Agriculture Statistics Unit, and she's working with farm structure surveys methodology for about 4 years now. Previously, she had worked in the methodology unit of Eurostat and International Institute of Romania. She will present to us a paper on European structural farm statistics and a new quality rating system for it. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to present today the new quality rating system recently adopted for European structural farm statistics. The European farm structure statistics are regulated by a new regulation which is going to be replaced soon by the so-called integrated farm statistics EU regulation, which aims to provide a more flexible, interlinked, and coherent systems of data collection structured into core and modules. The new regulation is going to be operational starting with the 2020 agricultural census and also be in place for the 2023 and 2026 data collections. The current and the upcoming regulations stipulate that the data estimates for farm structure surveys should be representatives by nuts to region, farm type, and farm size. This means that we can afford to publish reliable estimates in principle by these population breakdowns. What happens in practice is that Eurostat disseminates a lot of data broken down by various, also other variables. For example, farms structured by, broken down by legal form or age and sex of managers or economic size or livestock unit size classes for those agricultural holdings with livestock. When we intersect too many breakdown variables, the problem is that in table cells we get too few sample units. And having too few sample units, it means large sampling error, and it means that data send misleading messages to users. In this context, together with the working group, so in the working group on farm structure surveys composed by Eurostat and national statistical bodies representatives, we adopted the quality rating system, which acts as a traffic light system, indicating which estimates to disseminate with or without warning, or to suppress from dissemination for all types of population breakdowns, geographical or not. Before proposing to the working group the quality rating system for adoption, Eurostat analyzed several quality measures existing in practice, which we can calculate for table cell and which is more relevant for our use. So we reviewed the different type of sampling errors, but also the possibility to use a number of sample observation in cell. Also the possibility to use response rates per table cell, but unfortunately we have them only for the overall national population from the country quality reports, but not by table cell. We cannot compute them because we don't have enough information in the microdata for that. Response rates are useful for partially signaling risk of bias, partially because we don't have information on all respondents on their characteristics to compare against characteristic of respondents. So we decided to go for sampling errors for the first quality measure displayed in the previous slide. Then the question was which kind of sampling errors to use. Coefficients of variation are always useful because being dimensionless, they can compare the quality over indicators expressed in various measurement units. We decided to use coefficients of variation for totals and means of continuous variables, but not for proportions because coefficients of variations are not symmetric for proportion and not symmetric for counts. For example, for a proportion of holdings with a male manager, the CV, the coefficients of variation, is different than for the proportion of holdings with female managers. If we apply the quality rating system on the two proportions, we may end up disseminating one proportion and not disseminating the other. So we thought that this does not make sense because users can derive one proportion from another, and we decided to use standard errors as quality measures for proportion. The same for counts. I would like to say that the thresholds, the numeric thresholds that you see displayed on this chart, on this slide, are the same ones that Statistics Canada use for farm environmental management surveys. Before applying them to the FSS, though, we analyzed the 2013, at that time, data set in order to see if we can still afford to disseminate something if we apply this, or how much we can still disseminate. The quality document annex presents the distribution of the cell estimates by quality level for 2016 FSS estimates, provisional estimates already available on Eurostat website. In the document and in this slide, there are practically four tables broken down, first table by one variable, NATS to region, then the second table broken down by two variables, third table by three variables, the fourth table by four variables, agricultural area, sex and age of manager, and NATS to region. If we see the first table broken down by one variable, only 0.1% of table cells get suppressed, while for the fourth table, 23% of cells get suppressed. As expected, as we move from one to four breakdown variables, the quality in cells decreases. The computations are done for the EU countries, the EU member states, not for all, for 23, because three countries, they use census even in sample years, and one of them did not deliver on time the data. Well, and another one is Hungary that conducted a survey based on cluster sampling, while in Eurostat we calculate variance assuming stratified random sampling, and we are changing that. I will mention afterwards. So the upcoming and the current regulation stipulate precision thresholds for main crop and livestock variables, and countries report relative standard errors, synonym for a coefficient of variation, in the quality reports. And the quality reports are structured by the ESQRS version 2.0 standard in metadata handler. Eurostat also computes the relative standard errors, and we compare them with the one reported by countries, and surprise, we have differences in some of the cases, and then in order to identify the reasons, we look into the quality report section, sampling design, data compilation, and sampling error. We managed to identify eight reasons for the differences in coefficients of variation. And so far, we discussed with the working group and agreed on how to proceed to reconcile or to try to reconcile them for five reasons. For one of them, we could not manage to find a reconciliation way because it's about calibration, and it is very difficult in Eurostat to incorporate the variability given by the residuals of calibration into the total variance estimates, because we are dealing with so many countries with different calibration methods and variables, and we are not the only one. FSS is not the only one. I also read the paper on labor force surveys that came to the same conclusion. In FSS, we run simulation studies with the help of external experts that showed that the bias of not incorporating the residuals from calibration into variance estimation is not significant. We still have to discuss with the working group how to address imputation variability into the overall variance estimate. The problem is that countries, quite many countries do not keep record on imputed values in the data sets, in the microdata, so we cannot also have information on that. Two other reasons that we have to still deal with is that As I said before, there is one country from European Union, Hungary, that uses cluster sampling, and we are assuming stratified random sampling for variance estimation. In addition, there is a former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. I believe the name didn't change officially in the meantime since I submitted the slide, the presentation. So there are two countries in 2013 and also in 2016. The validation is not closed for all countries for 2016. but it seems that there are a few countries as well. So the thing is that, yes, so I we try to accommodate multi-phase, multi-stage and cluster sampling in our variance estimation method. And also we want to see how we deal with multi-phase, because in the upcoming regulation, we have core samples and module samples, and module samples are extracted from the core samples. And this entails multi-phase sampling. And we can assume that the module sample is sampled directly from the sampling frame if we have an independence. What means? It means that if we run the module sample, when we design the module sample, we should not use variables collected with the core sample. Countries should not use. Just, I have still two slides. So we are collecting, we plan to collect in Eurostat from countries additional information in the microdata, sampling design information. We already collect primary strata. We plan to collect primary sampling units and secondary sampling units and order of selection of these units. The fields are optional in the, are planned to be optional in the transmission. And depending on the national sampling size, of course, countries should transmit only one or more information, more fields. As a conclusion, because when we proposed and adopted together with the member states the quality rating system, we reviewed the share of the cells that we still can disseminate, so relevance. Then we also looked at what can be considered as qualitative for the level of the standard errors and coefficients of variation against other practices. So we looked at the accuracy, and also we didn't want to impose sample sizes, higher sample sizes in countries, so resources point of view. We consider that the quality rating system is a good compromise. Next steps. We are working on development of the variance estimation method and the application of it in the new IT system based on SAS for the future, starting with 2020 agricultural census and beyond. I say also for the census, because in the 2020 agricultural census, we will still have sample surveys for the small farms. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Denisa. And now we have time for 3-4 questions. We'll take the questions and then we'll answer. So, yes.
Thank you. I have two questions to Ioannis. The first, I catched your statement that data on enterprises is less sensible than data on legal units. And later on, I catched your remark that people would die for the enterprise data that you now collected in the EGR. How does that fit? And the second question, you showed us some interesting results about the analysis of half of these 300 groups that have been profiled. Why only about 157 of 310 groups? What about the rest?
Next question. Yes.
Thank you. I also have a question to Ioannis. You show us that two graphs on the nice distribution of the results, and you mentioned that the correct figures will be something in the middle. What is that middle point?
Thank you.
Third question for Ioannis. What is your feeling about the real implementation of these new statistical units, these new enterprises, in the statistical domains? Are you referring to SBAs, FATs, short-term statistics? And do you think that the new FRIPS regulation can help to accelerate the implementation of these new enterprises?
Okay, thank you. We have, we can take one more question, but not for Ioannis, please. So, if you have one more question, for now, okay. So, I will ask you to ask the question, and then we will, I will have another round, quick round.
Thank you very much for all your questions. I will start with the question from Roland from Germany. So, data on legal units are very important and very useful. So EGR, the Eurogroups register, contains 100,000 groups with their constituent legal units that they are around already 1 million. And data on these legal units on employment turnover and activity. So nobody, for sure, there will be many people, even in the commission, in the tax directorate, TaxUD, that could kill for such data because they are important for many purposes. However, we see that the implementation of enterprise in the sense that I explained is a better representation of the real economic activity at national level. So to give a simple example, mainly for the colleagues who are not aware of the details, so the fact that one company, one legal unit that was producing beverages, for example, in a country, split itself for practical reasons in a producing, in a manufacturing company, an IT company, a real estate company, and I don't know what else company, does not make it also an IT company, does not make it a real estate agent. It's still a manufacturing company. So finding a way to regroup again these legal units under the same enterprise makes, for statistical purposes, our life more difficult but more meaningful. So the statistics should not change just because legal units start reorganizing themselves within groups. So as regards the second question, so profiling started in the beginning, European profiling started in the beginning of the ESBR's project. So since the beginning we have profiled, the national profilers have profiled collaboratively 310 groups. However, the implementation of the interactive profiling tool, the profiling tool the profilers use to collaborate online, was finished 3 years ago. So around half of these groups, 157, are profiled with the tool, and the other half is profiled using Excel files and so on. So to run meaningful queries and to run tests, we took only the groups that are in the tool already. So that's why we are analyzing only this half. So as regards your question, you didn't state your affiliation. So something in the middle. I wish I knew where the golden middle is. So it is not, in my opinion, and now I'm not expressing Eurostat's opinion, but it's my opinion, the calculating statistics on legal units at the national level, especially when we're talking about sectors where the groups are dominant, is not the best way to do it. On the other hand, making a very high-level abstraction, saying that this group has one activity worldwide, so this activity should be applied to all its activities, to all legal units in each country, again, does not make a lot of sense. So to give an example, if a company, if a group relocates all of its activities, all of its IT activities worldwide in one country, does not mean that this country, in this country the company is an IT company. So it's still a manufacturing company. However, we cannot neglect that in this country the main activity is IT, that there is an IT activity that is significant. So, yes, I cannot tell you where the middle is, but we have to find the golden middle. And then the last question from Esteban from Spain. So This is a very good question. So yes, finally, all this work that we did, all the countries together with Eurostat, and all this approach has to give some fruits, has to give some results on statistics. So I don't know if the current regulation that is discussed, FRIPS, can really accelerate the implementation of these concepts. I think it is in this direction. However, I think that the way that we are working now in the European statistical system, in business statistics, I think that the awareness is more and more there, that we have to find a way to adapt our methodologies to include globalization effects in the calculation of business statistics, starting with FATS, for example, for an affiliate statistics. And then I see also that the economic statistics with GNI at this point are very interested in this new approach to business statistics. So,
thank you very much. Also, I have a question, general question for all of you. Okay, you mentioned how you will take this. I will just take one or two minutes. How you will take this further, but more specifically for all of you, for example, what are the implications for the ICT survey on the skills, on the ICT skills, if you think that there will be implications? For Valeria, how you'll take this further at European level, how your work will be used further, and so on. If you can say a few words on how you plan to, I know you mentioned some aspects, but as a general comment, how you want to take this further.
Okay, so... What could be the changes introduced to ICT skills survey? Okay, like the implication from my presentation would be introduce the direct assessment, give the respondents the computers and really verify what they can do. Maybe something more like complicated or including more tasks than we just did. We just concentrated on three tasks, like zipping the files or connecting new devices is a bit more complicated with a laptop that belongs to the interviewer. But some other questions could be introduced. There is, of course, a clear disadvantage, the costs. Yeah, the cost, it costs quite a lot to have this solution, and okay, usually the amount of money is limited, so okay, that's a big challenge. Okay.
Thank you. Now for 2018, new task force on establishment of European data sets of labor market areas has its mandate, and the idea is to the end that we have a full coverage, and also we have an online visualization tool called Regions and Cities Illustrated. We're planning at the end of this year, ideally, to have a new tab there presenting first the geometries of the labor market areas all over Europe, and after that we will extend it with a limited set of data that we can produce by ourselves based just on the commuting flows, because additional data collection is not foreseen for the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Just for the statistic on the consequence of taking into account profiling in research and development statistics. The problem with is connected with what said Ioannis on the... I don't know if in Europe there is a consensus that we have to disseminate all our statistics only at the enterprise level. So in the next working group in October about research and development statistics, we have to take a decision to say to the countries to make the kind of work we have done with Camille to reflect to carry out work or research about how to taking into account the enterprise level in our statistics. But the first step is to have a good profiling work. We have. It is an input, an indispensable input, a compulsory input to have a good profiling before to try to disseminate good statistics at enterprise level. Thank you.
Regarding data derived from samples, as mentioned, we plan to adjust our variance estimation method to ultimate cluster approximation and to use SAS procedure in the new SAS IT system for that. On the data from administrative sources, though, we assess quality through the quality reports, asking detailed information from countries on coverage, over coverage, under coverage, multiple listings, processing errors, missing data, coherences of definition of characteristics between FSS and the administrative source and other information. But we are stay aware of the developments on quality of administrative data and on data from multi-sources. And we are looking forward for the guidelines on quality on multi-source data within the framework of the ESS VPAT-MIN. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all the speakers. Thank you to the audience for the questions. And now we can declare the session closed. Enjoy your coffee break.